Okay, so you might have heard of Aung San Suu Kyi, or maybe you're aware of the plight of the Rohingya minorities, but you may not be aware that in Myanmar, it's one of the largest pulse-producing nations in the world, and that's what drew me to work in Myanmar. So we've been working there for the last few years. That's been funded by the Australian Centre for International Agricultural Research, which is part of Australian Aid. And we've also been funded by the Crawford Fund as well. So we've got a project that's focused on pulses there, and that's the topic of my talk today, to improve nitrogen fixation of those pulses in Myanmar. So Myanmar is situated in Southeast Asia, and we've been working in the central dry zone of Myanmar. So that encompasses the regions of Magwe, Mandalay, and the Sagai region, certainly the southern part of the Sagai region. And in this area, there's about 1 million farmers who produce pulses, or certainly legume crops, and very legume-dominant systems to provide a lot of the nitrogen for their rice systems as well. In these systems, the production systems in which we work there, they're very nutrient poor, very unresponsive to nutrient additions, and the systems are very low in terms of technology, inputs, and as you can see here, the technical inputs there, just extremely low. So there's many gains to be made. But despite all this, Myanmar, as I mentioned, is a really dominant country in terms of legume production. So you can see here that there's a large number of pulses that are produced by Myanmar. They're primarily black gram, green gram, pigeon pea, chickpea, and groundnut. And if you consider that the first three countries there, India, China, and Nigeria, use all of their pulses or their legumes domestically, you come to the realization that Myanmar is actually a major pulse exporter. It's the second biggest pulse exporter after Canada. So it really is a large legume producer. And indeed, chickpea has really grown in production in that country. So you can see over the last two decades there's been a major increase in the production of chickpeas. And we've focused on chickpeas primarily because we think that we can improve chickpea through the use of inoculants and improve nitrogen fixation in those systems. So as I mentioned, the systems are very very much smallholder, very small in scale, and very small in terms of inputs. You can see here one of those small fields in Myanmar where the chickpeas have been harvested and just put into piles before being processed. So very labour-intensive sorts of systems. So the things that we know about these systems is they're very much subsistence farming systems, obviously low technology, little investment. The majority of the genotypes come from India primarily, so the genotypes of plants. We know that there's a range of soil deficiencies and nutrient limitations, phosphorus, potassium, sulfur, boron, zinc. We're not sure about molybdenum. There's also been a really limited history of inoculation in this country, so we have very little information apart from the small amount of overseas aid which has contributed to inoculants. So we know very little about the inoculants for those legumes. We know there's little field response to nutrient additions, and there's limited scientific capacity within the country as well. So the questions that we posed are, the Myanmar soils contain mesorhizobia, the rhizobia that nodulate with chickpea. So we focused on chickpea, as I said, because we consider that this will be a crop that will be responsive to inoculation, perhaps unlike peanut, groundnut. If so, are those populations of rhizobia symbiotically effective? So how effective are those populations of rhizobia? And if we inoculate, can we increase nodulation, grain yield, and nitrogen fixation in these systems? So how far can we push them, given that the nitrogen contribution from legumes is very important for their overall farming systems? And then another question we're grappling with is how diverse are those rhizobia on Myanmar farms, given that they're entirely unknown as to the source of where they have arisen. So if we look here at an example of 20 farms within that central dry zone of Myanmar, when we tested the population size of the rhizobia in the soils using a most probable number test, you can see that the majority of those sites on farmers' fields were quite low in the numbers of rhizobia in the soil that they contained. So I've got a threshold there, which is from some published data, that we expect below that we may get inoculation responses in the field. Above that, we're unlikely to see responses to inoculation with rhizobia. When we looked at the effectiveness, the symbiotic effectiveness of those populations using a whole soil inoculation, we found that they were fairly moderate in comparison to a range of commercial strains that we used, and also in terms of the response to plants that have been given nitrate or no nitrate controls. So they're reasonably adequate, but I guess the real test is in the field. So we did some experiments in the field at a range of field sites, at seven field sites, one of which failed. But because we knew that there were nutrient limitations in the soil, we had a factorial design, which was plus and minus inoculation, plus and minus rhizobia, and plus and minus phosphorus. So fairly simple design, which included five replicates. Oops. So just to show you some of the results of those, we saw that nodulation was relatively high in some sites and quite low in others, and it wasn't impacted greatly by inoculation for some reason. We also found very few responses to the addition of phosphorus in those treatments. So the rhizobial populations enhancing nodulation, it was considered that the inherent rhizobial population had the major impact in terms of nodule numbers. When we looked at grain yield from those same six sites, we found that there were moderately small responses to both phosphorus and also to inoculation. So you can see in the first four of those treatments we had responses to phosphorus. We didn't see any interactions between phosphorus or the inoculation with rhizobia, but we got moderate responses. And we consider that this might be due to other limitations in the system, be they agronomic or nutrient limitations, for example. So we also looked at nitrogen fixation, so we've used the 15N natural abundance, where we've collected reference species, and we've collected our chickpeas, and we've looked at the differences in 15N natural abundance between those two different treatments, and you can see that there was a large difference there in terms of the 15N that was accumulated in the reference species relative to the 15N in the chickpea. You can also see that the chickpea had slightly higher concentrations of nitrogen further across on the x-axis there. So we found, based on this data, we found that chickpeas fixed about 60 to 85% of their nitrogen, meaning that about 15% to 40% of the nitrogen in the shoots of the chickpea was taken from nitrate in the soil. And these figures are similar to what has been published previously for values in Australia and elsewhere, where they've seen about 60% is about very common for chickpea in terms of what the proportion of nitrogen that's fixed. As I mentioned, there are multiple nutrient limitations in these soils, and we think that may have moderated the lack of big responses that we got to inoculation. And you can see there some data we've collected within the central dry zone assessing soils for their concentrations of phosphorus, potassium and sulfur. And over a large number of field trials, we've seen very little response to nutrient additions, which is quite a puzzle to us. As part of that scenario, we took some of the phosphorus that we had used for some of the experiments on chickpeas, and we measured that back in Australia to determine, just to make sure that the fertilizer contained enough phosphorus. Was that the reason that we were seeing some limitations? And you can see there we've got, so this is an analysis of three different triple superphosphate samples. The one that we had, the first one on the left is a typical analysis of what triple superphosphate should look like. The second one, that Mitha, was a phosphorus that we used in our experiment. That had a similar proportion of phosphorus and also sulfur. But you can see the sample from Zalok actually had much less phosphorus than we'd consider would be normal for a triple superphosphate. So these fertilizers are imported, and we've seen some evidence here of counterfeit fertilizers. So on top of having nutrient-poor soils, very low inputs, some of the phosphorus that is available to the Myanmar farmers is also counterfeit. So we're looking into that a bit more as well. So overall, chickpea rhizobia in Myanmar soils are very low in number. They did provide adequate symbiotic effectiveness, though, taking into account both our laboratory tests and then also field measurements of nitrogen fixation. Inoculants and phosphorus fertilizer had some influence on nodulation and yield, but we feel that was tempered by a range of other factors, including things like the multiple nutrient deficiencies, poor agronomy in terms of plant numbers, an inability to manage pests and diseases, and we found that the counterfeit fertilizer is, in general, fairly rare. So, thank you. So the normal rotation, it depends on the system. And for the chickpea systems that we're looking at, it's basically a rice chickpea system. So the chickpeas are grown in the winter. They're grown on stored soil moisture, on vertisol soil, so cracking clays, particularly in the northern parts of the central dry zone. In the drier, more upland regions, the system's dominated by groundnuts, pigeon peas and sesame. Okay. Yeah, so I guess there's a question over whether soils that are flooded naturally reduce in numbers of rhizobia. That's one question, but some evidence that I've seen in the literature suggests that's not the case, that rhizobia are able to persist even in soils that are flooded, but I'm happy to hear from others who have experience in that. So in this case, we're just using weed species from the site, which so we didn't deliberately sow any reference species in those particular trials. And certainly we're on farmers' fields, then we're just taking whatever we can use. We try to use broadleaf species. We know that grasses tend to not be such a good reference relative to broadleaf species, but the assumptions are that they're capturing nitrogen from the soil at the same depth and for the same time period that the crop is. So it has to be an annual species and so on. So we've taken those things on board. I didn't put that there. I know that they're generally low. There's a lot of manures that are used typically as fertilizers, and that's really important for nutrition in these soils. So we've done some further experiments beyond these. I would suggest that they're around 0.5% organic carbons. So yeah, very low. Yeah. Yeah, so some work that